I'm Tracy.
And I'm Sharon. And we are Feet of Clay.
Confessions of the Cult Sisters. Or what I like to say, the Gathering of the Antichrist Sisters, because that's what's happening today.
That's what we are. Oh my gosh, wait a second. Where are my devil horns? I need to put those things back on. That's right. That's right. Oh. So we are actually, this is part two, everybody. We just finished up recording a wonderful conversation with two amazing young ladies, Rachel and Molly, from an amazing podcast, Cheers to Leaving. And if you're tuning in right now, you're going to want to go over to their podcast, Cheers to Leaving, and hear part one of this conversation so that you can understand some of the references and silly things we say. Hey, 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 folks. Okay, so after we finished recording with Rachel and Molly and listened back to it, we realized we should probably put in an extra word of caution for this episode.
I think that is very much indicative of who we are, Sharon.
I think so.
So in addition to Sharon's typical salty language, we are going to talk about sexuality and sex and some pretty nitty-gritty stuff.
Oh, no, not again. We're getting a reputation, Tracy.
Yes. So as always, that's probably not appropriate for kids. And then we want to make a special call out. It might not even be appropriate for our own kids. But of course, they get to make that decision.
Yeah, they do. All right. And we also want to reiterate, really important, when we talk about our exes, it is not our intention to drag anyone through the mud. It's just the fact is, our past experiences with them are such huge parts of our own stories. And so it's kind of impossible to talk about what happened in our lives without mentioning them from time to time as well. Look, we've all been broken. We've all needed healing. We all need grace. We all need forgiveness. That's all of us.
Yes, all of us. So, okay, everyone, you've been warned. So now on to our conversation with the Cheers to Leaving gals. Welcome. Introduce yourselves, my ladies. I do want to say that you guys have the best intro ever. I have a red glass of wine for those who can't see me. Cheers to Leaving comes up so much out of my mouth because it's the best toast ever. Cheers to Leaving, ladies.
Cheers.
And cheers. I'm Rachel, and I'm really glad to be here.
And I'm Molly. Sorry, I'm like eating chicken nuggets right now. Very professional. I'm also very happy to be here.
Molly's eating them nugs.
That's my dog.
Oh, good. I'm glad we got the doggy too. Yeah, I just finished a square of Ghirardelli chocolate, so
yum.
Go for it, man.
Yeah, so if you guys haven't popped over on their platform, we've been recording for a good bit. We got going, and so I think we had some starving ladies here who are trying to eat and drink in between us taking up with the next part. So I just want to say that I am so excited to host the Cheers to Leaving gals. Cult sisters, cult cousins, antichrist, fellow quiverful, ex-evangelical. It's all a mouthful, but very excited to have them on our podcast because, you know, Sharon, this is like the meeting of the generations.
Yes, it is.
So you and I could be their mothers.
We could be. We could be. And maybe we're kind of honorary at this point. You know, we can give you some motherly advice at some point.
Please. Like, you guys can be my moms, like both of you.
Yeah.
Or you can be like, more advice to leave on the roadside. That's right.
Molly has two mommies. Works for me.
Sharon, sometimes what? You say things and I'm like, that's really queer. And I can say that because I'm queer. But sometimes I wonder, Sharon, about you.
Sometimes it's in the last hour and a half.
There's a lot of fluidity in my life. There's
I love
a
this.
Lot of fluidity.
I love it.
There is. And we would get definitely, I wouldn't say accused. That's probably the wrong kind of thing. But people would definitely think, you know, our friendship has transpired over 40 years and we did the whole deconstructing together and, you know, our kids have been friends. And so when we were out playing, when we finally broke free of the purity culture.
That was our 40s when we had our fun.
Yeah, great decade. We, you know, had some good times together. So I do have some very compromising pictures that mm-hmm, I have been mm-hmm. searching for, and I found them. And I think that people will definitely think we've been in a relationship when they see these pictures.
I love it.
They will. But, you know, here's the thing. We have joked from time to time, Tracy, that if it would just be so easy. If I was lesbian, if you were lesbian, it would just be so easy because we'd be a great couple. But I'm like, I'm just not into pussy.
That's fair.
You know, so it didn't really, couldn't work. Just couldn't work.
You could just be like those companion, you could have a companionship and just live together.
Yeah, like Golden Girls.
Yeah. Well, we kind of already do have that.
What's so funny though is like, I feel like there are certain friendships that like feel like love relationships. Like your friendship is deeply romantic. You have a deeply romantic friendship. Hmm. You're each other's soulmates in a way.
I feel like romance is not the right. I'd say intimate, but I wouldn't say romantic.
Well, okay, but like romance is like, could be anything. It's like, let's start a podcast together. Like, okay.
Yeah. And we do have this weird connection over time.
I said, I feel like you can have intimate women relationships, but I don't know if I'd use the word romantic because that involves like you're in love with each other. But I think you can still be.
Okay, maybe I'm just too gay for y'all. Very, but anyway.
Get out of here, Molly. You can be very close and you can feel the type of love and bonding with another woman friend.
Yes. That, and that then also feels, eat her out.
Oh my God. Mute your microphone.
Molly, I'm sorry. I just like dick. It's just the way it is. It's not going to work for me.
But if the hormones.
I'm attracted to men, but I'm not attracted to men.
Yeah.
I feel like you guys are soulmates, though. Like there's like a soulmate path. Like your souls were destined to walk alongside each other. I think that's so beautiful.
I think women relationships can be rich and intimate and just as fulfilling as romantic relationships, but they're not romantic. We've just isolated, you know, relationships to be so romantic in this day and age.
Yes.
And I think sometimes when women have such intimate and beautiful relationships with each other and kindred spirits, mm-hmm. like Anne of Green Gables, then we're weirded out by it, but it's actually so normal and so beautiful. And I think it just intimidates heterosexual men because they're like, how do I even? And you're like, you can't.
You can't.
Okay. That's anyway.
That's so great. So I have a picture of us and, you know, I haven't posted it yet because it hasn't come up in our podcast, but maybe it's coming up now. So when we deconstructed, obviously, for those listeners who can't see us, we do have our devil horns on because as we've deconstructed, we have been called the Antichrist. We've been called vessels of the devil. And so we really walked into that mantle at the beginning of like, okay, you know what? You're going to call us that. We're going to do this. So we did go to a seance together.
We did.
In Richmond, Virginia. It was one of the old, Ruth Christ had turned this old plantation house and they were doing a ghost hunting episode.
Wait a second. I'm thinking of something different.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a difference. We went to a couple seances. This was really a seance. This was a real seance. This was at Ruth Chris in Richmond, Virginia at Belgrade, I think it was.
Yeah.
So we're at the table and there's a backstory. There's always a backstory. There's a backstory to this in that someone in Sharon's sphere had seen a vision of my death.
I remember that now. We can just call it out. You can call it out.
It's up to you. That's outing your people.
I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it. We'll decide if we're going to bleep it out.
Okay.
It was my ex-husband because he really believed that Tracy was the one leading me down the devil's path and into divorce. And so this was a convenient way. Yeah. That maybe if she died, then I would be shocked back into reality and coming back to Jesus.
Yes. So he had this vision and my name was on the gravestone and it was, I remember the date. Obviously these things don't fall lightly around you. It was April 13th. And this was, what day was your marriage? It was like
April 18th. It was like this way I was going to come back to him before our anniversary, our 25th anniversary or something like that.
So to honor that date, we went to a seance, as you do.
As you do.
And
this is now a very different kind of podcast. The paranormal podcast of the paranormal.
The paranormal cult. And, it, you know, I say seance, but they were really, it was like the Ghost Hunters shows or whatever. They were doing a live opportunity.
It was just a silly thing.
Not a seance, but no.
So we were in a table full of people and we decide to kiss each other, to open mouth kiss.
Love that.
I forgot about that. Oh my God.
Tracy's like, how could you forget?
How did you forget that you made out with your best friend?
I know. Like, so I'm going to tell you. I'm going to tell you why.
We're acting. We're drama.
No. She hurt me forever. So we're at this table. We do this open mouth kiss, and she pulls away from me and she says, "You taste like coffee. I hate coffee."
She was not into it. Tracy, you were downcast after this, right? Like, you never tried ever again.
I was like, that's why I go for men, because they never complain about that kind of stuff.
Maybe you should go for lesbian women and not straight women.
Oh, that's good call-out.
Oh, man. I totally forgot about that.
Yeah.
And you've got a picture.
I do have a picture.
Excellent. We're going to have to post it.
Of you guys kissing?
Yeah. I guess she's got a picture of us kissing.
This needs to be the picture of this podcast episode.
It will be great. It will be so great. And then we had taken our daughters to New York, and they were not quite 21, but they were almost there. And so they were having a good time at the bar. And these men that they met were like, your moms are so gay. Like, they are totally hiding it from you. If you don't think that that is happening with them right now, then you guys are really deceived. And they were like, no, we think they're just really good friends.
Which is also something someone in denial of their mom being gay might say.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying
that always happens in TV shows. They're always like, no, they're just best friends that live together. And everyone's like,
You know what? You know what a lot of historians this day and age say? Like, when you look at people like Emily Dickinson, you know, who were considered hetero poets and things like that, she had like a very intense relationship with a female friend who was just her lifelong friend, who she spent all of her days with, and she'd send letters to saying, like, I crave the scent of you. Yeah, they were just friends. They were just friends.
See, Sharon doesn't crave the scent of me.
Nothing
Sharon
romantic.
Does not like Tracy's breath.
He no, did not crave my scent. No.
And I'm telling you, I'm sorry. I just like dick, not pussy. So it's not going to work. Yeah.
So in the so we haven't shared this yet, and we're just, who knows how this is going to go. But we have shared.
Okay,
man.
Now I'm afraid now. When she says that, I don't know what's coming.
It's the truth serum.
Rachel, we need to get freakier because they're freakadeeks. Like, they're on a whole other level.
Molly, you are freaky enough for both of us.
You need to get on my level of freaky. Okay, let me take you down the road. It is a beautiful life.
Oh, God. Okay. So, and I think Troy and Brian mentioned it on their podcast about that slinky swing, right? When you've lived under purity culture for so long, mm-hmm. and then you're free and it's exploration. And at that point, we're older and our kids aren't real small anymore. And so there's just a lot of opportunity to explore. So we did it. So Sharon, anyway, you were with a man for a period of time.
Mm-hmm. A man.
And then she passed him to me.
Oh, right.
You guys are Eskimo sisters.
Yes. I didn't know if you could say God. That anymore, but I'm like, we're Eskimo sisters.
I don't think it's politically correct, but it's okay. We were raised in a cult. We don't know any better.
Okay. It's probably not politically correct. But what else? Not. Did they rename it?
I don't know. That's the street term for it.
Yeah, that is the street term. And I'm going to take my cues from you because you guys are younger. So, yes. And so Sharon, so I always say she gives me her hand-me-downs. Because
it's not just clothes.
That's what a good friend does. She said, this is some good dick. My friend could use
That's
it.
That's right. Friends with benefits.
I had a friend that did that to me once too.
You know what, Rachel? Yeah. I'll do that to you too.
Okay, wait.
How'd that go?
You want me to send you some dick? I'll send you some dick in a box.
Dick in a box.
Oh, that's the one of the best skits in the history of the universe. Oh,
so good. Yes. Okay. Okay. So Sharon sent you her hand-me-downs and...
Yes. So I think it's more of a testimony to how much we both do like the male parts, because I think we got a review, right, Sharon?
We did. we were told we were really good.
Y'all were outstanding. Rachel, okay. Were you told you were outstanding? Because I get told I'm outstanding.
That's great.
So we think maybe that's what people say, right?
Yeah, just right? Like people- right? We're all outstanding, right? I feel like these guys are just like saying that like to make you feel good. Like they're trying to boost your self-esteem because they definitely want to get in there again. So they're like, that was the best head I've ever had. Please keep doing it. Like, you know?
Or maybe it's the cult sister rebound. It's the purity girl rebound, you know?
So did you just magically know how to suck dick?
Maybe you just took out all that pent up sexual tension and you just were like, I'm, you know, down for whatever. I feel like that's a thing. I feel like that's a thing.
It is actually. Like, I would say, like, I have had people ask me, are you this freaky because you were so, like, restrained in purity culture? I'm like, oh, for sure. Like, definitely.
Yeah. You're like, I'm down to do whatever.
I'm making up for lost time. Okay.
Correct.
That's the aspect of it. And it's a sad aspect a little bit, I think, because like, don't you just wish you were just like free to just explore your sexuality, have your sexual debut, which is what I'm hearing people call it now, instead of losing your virginity, you know, and just in a very positive light of being able to explore what you wanted as a young person, which is, I think, is when you're supposed to do it. I love that women are doing it, you know, older now too, because you guys were MILFs, you know, it was great.
We call those sexual renaissance.
Sexual renaissance.
Mm-hmm. I actually had a t-shirt that said, got MILF? Question mark.
Oh, yes. I love it.
And you know what's so funny is who later became my husband, with him and his dad.
His in dad that shirt. Hair.
And he saw me in the t-shirt because I didn't know he was coming over. And I'm wearing my Got MILF. That was that.
Mm-hmm.
The Got Milk.
We were live, yes.
You were. Sorry. And he says to me, he goes, oh, you like milk.
You're like, does that look like a K to you?
Just a letter there, buddy.
Oh, my God. I guess you had to be there. It was funnier when it happened.
That is pretty funny.
I feel like he knew and was trying to make it not.
Tracy, where are you going with all this?
I just wanted to, you know, intro. There's things we have never shared those things, so we get to share them with you.
We love that.
I love it.
I feel so special right now. Because, like, I genuinely, when I listen to all of your episodes, I'm like, okay, like, there are deeper questions I want to know the answers to. And this was one of them. Are Tracy and Sharon gay for each other? I really wanted to know.
So I have stepped back and I have thought that as people listen, that they would definitely have that question. And I think at the end of one of them, I say that, you know, that was something I had to explore, not for Sharon. Because it is like a sisterly bond. It just is. But because I was so sexually dysfunctional, I was like, is that, do men not do this for me? And this was before I had anyone outside of my marital relationship, because I was just shut down. And so I was willing to explore that and willing to consider that.
Did you actually try with anyone?
I didn't try with anyone, but my imagination is very good.
Tracy, if you're, I'm just saying, you cracked the door open. The door has been cracked.
The door has been cracked. And there is another sister, we like to call them sisters, who was also at our commune, who Sharon will know, but I'm not going to say her name. We definitely talked about it. And so I think that there is, I can't believe we're going here and must be the line. But I
didn't see any notes. There were no notes about this part of a conversation.
About this topic.
I don't think Tracy needs notes. I have no notes for Tracy.
I think Tracy knows what she needs to say.
So I definitely in my exploration, I've thought about it in how people are introverts and extroverts. And I'm definitely an extrovert, as is Sharon. And I think that ability to share, like I'm not opposed to a group setting or a ménage à trois, but I would still say I default mainly to males. But yeah.
Well, I did that once.
And have you tried?
I did that once, but I was definitely into the dude, not the chick. So.
Oh, you did do a ménage à trois.
So, okay. So, Tracy, I have questions. I just have questions.
We all have questions.
We're an open book if you haven't gathered.
Tracy, I think
I need a timeline.
I think that when I first started exploring women, I also just explored women in ménage à trois situations. And I'll have to say it's a lot different one-on-one than it is when there is a man present. The way women explore sensuality and pleasure looks a lot different than you would see in porn, or that maybe you would be in more of a performative state while in a ménage à trois with a male present. So I'm just saying, because it's a thought that you've had. I'm going to send you some Instagram pages to look at. But it's worth exploring outside of that kind of scenario. I think it is. If it's ever been a question for you, I don't think you can judge it based on a threesome, because threesomes are just a very different kind of experience, period.
Yeah. No, I think that's good. Mm-hmm. Good advice.
And that's for any listeners too, who might be also like wondering about their sexuality and like, you know, what their preferences are after coming out of something like this. It be safe out there, but try things, try lots of things and try them in different types of containers, you know, maybe.
No, I think that's super good advice. And I think that, so we have, you know, some dear gay brothers who are at the ministry that we've had conversations with, you know, and I've asked them, you know, especially living in the commune. And I think when you're so suppressed, it is hard to even know. I mean, and their struggles were very similar because they had so pushed down their sexuality, they didn't even have a chance in their early young teens to even know. Because any sexual thought, any sexual practice, you had to put down. So I think it is a really good message of being willing to explore, being willing to try different things. Why I think the gift for me was the artist in Philadelphia that was my first partner outside of my marriage was a wild man. And
you need those.
It was really great experience. So
I loved that story when you told it. I was like just smiling the entire time hearing that story about you and your artist man.
I haven't listened to it yet. What episode
is that?
It
was fantastic.
Yeah, it was a bonus, and that was, you know,
your letter was the bonus, but the description of your time with them was that Virgins and Volcanoes 4?
Yeah.
It was one of them. You just got to listen to all of them.
Oh, and 4. Okay. I'm only on the first one. But I will say, Tracy, too, my first one out of purity culture as well was a very wild, unavailable man. And I don't mean like he was married. I just mean like relationally unavailable. I will say the only danger of that, it being your first experience outside of purity culture, for me, is I hold up that experience and that sexual experience to everything else since then, and that passion and that, you know, just that insane, hot, whatever. And I think you can't do that. I'm not saying you're doing that. I'm saying I've done that in the past. I'm not saying you're doing that, but I don't know if it was like because it was the first time out of it, or if this guy was really good and really passionate. I don't know what it was, but there was just something about that relationship that my mind will go back to sometimes, even now, that was just like, what was it about that relationship that just was so – and it's probably not sustainable, you know, like in a marriage or over time or whatever. It just was what it was, and I need to take it and I need to be fine with it and whatever.
So I'm going to give a bit of motherly advice right now.
Ooh. Give it to me, mama.
Yeah. Who's your mommy?
Okay.
So, you know, we are, Tracy and I are both postmenopausal, you know, and there's whole yes. sort of things of, well, what happens to your sex life and your libido? And there's definitely changes. And sure. anyway, I'm not going to go into all kinds of stuff, but I am reading a book right now that was recommended called Come As You Are by, she's a researcher, Dr. Emily, I can't remember. But anyway, it's about women's sexuality. And as I'm reading this, and it's talking about context and accelerators and breaks. And so whether you are, I mean, she's got examples. I mean, whether you're in a heterosexual relationship or whether you're a lesbian or whether you're, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter any of it, but it's both looking at anatomy and brain parts and emotions. And it's like, whoa, this is incredible. And I actually am looking at it going, damn. I kind of think maybe the best sex of my entire life is yet to come. Oh, and it's pretty cool. And so I recommend that book, ladies. Yeah. All women out there, whoever you are, read it and maybe even get your partner to read it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't have this problem. I have an amazing sex life, but like Rachel, you should read it.
Yeah, but maybe your sex life isn't as great as you think it is.
Maybe it could be even better.
No, listen.
Maybe you're going to have great sex. 20 years from now.
Yes, I will. I will always because I have amazing sex. I have amazing sex. I mean, like, I can count on my hand the number of times when it wasn't amazing. One hand.
Love that for you.
That's great.
I think I've been really blessed with really amazing partners, but I also think that I'm really good at like knowing what I want and what I need, and I know how to communicate it. And not everybody knows how to do that, but I also spent a lot of time listening to podcasts that were about the female orgasm and pleasure and how to access that and how to heal the parts of ourselves that are keeping us from accessing that. And so I think there is a lot of work that comes with great orgasm. With great orgasm comes great responsibility, okay? Yeah. Like you really do have to heal.
That's your book coming out.
I do want to interject though. You have not been with a partner for 8 to 10 years where you are dealing with the same partner and doing things that are like almost, you know what I mean? Like it's not the same thing every day. You're not dealing with kids. You're not dealing, she's leaving. but you know, I think that plays a lot into it.
Oh yeah.
I think there's something where if you're like, yeah, when you start a relationship, sex is incredible. It is incredible for the first couple of years. But when you have been with a partner for 8 or more years and you're married and you're throwing in all kinds of other extra stress and job stuff and kids and all of that stuff, it really puts a different spin on sex.
It does.
So I feel like I love that for you, Molly. But I also feel like unless you've been in that situation too, you can't say that. Because there's lots of
I can, because I have been in a long-term relationship. I was with a partner for 6 years, and we actually lived together for quite a bit of that. And we ended up separating after like 6 years, because there was a point, our sex life was never bad. That was never an issue. It was more just like,
I guess I'm thinking of throwing in like marriage, house, kids, all kinds of other stuff.
I don't know. I think that you cannot make that giant assumption that all women have like bed death, like where they're like sex life.
No, I'm not making that assumption at all. I'm just saying there's monotony in everything to some extent. And when you throw in like, especially if you literally have children, sex is going to change in your body after children. And it's going to change.
I just think that there's ways to access this, as Sharon is saying. I'm agreeing with her. I'm agreeing that everyone should read these books and like work on the stuff that they should work on to have
and,
a great sex
and
life.
Get a safe space of women with variety of backgrounds and experiences, because these are the things we don't really get to talk about, like the things you're saying, Rachel. I would hear that and people would say, you know, the beginning of your relationship is the best sex ever, and I of course didn't have that, you know, in my marriage. And you know, then coming out, and I think it definitely is a lot of variety out there, and your body changes, pregnancy.
And it depends on what's physically going on with your partner too. My sister and our husband have had physical difficulties, not because the desire wasn't there, but because of hormones or whatever else, right? Like I feel like you can't blanket statement stuff, because it also depends on fit, like a lot of physical things as well, is my only point. in saying what I'm saying is that there's just so much that attributes to the sex life besides what you want.
There's such a wide, there's such a wide range. And I think the thing that is most important for people to realize is whatever you're feeling, whatever you're enjoying, whatever you're struggling with, it's normal. Mm-hmm. Once you stop thinking that you're broken and you just begin to understand, it is context. When you got a bunch of kids screaming around, no, you're not going to feel particularly sexy. Does that mean you have to have no sex life? No, but when you're feeling pressure,
when you're stressed, some people shut down, completely shut down when they're stressed.
Right. And then you can reflect on yourself as then there's something wrong with me, or I wish it was, or this or that. Mm-hmm. And what I loved about this particular book, and I think it's really cool, Molly, it sounds like you have found a lot of resources in your life that have really helped you.
Well, I also don't have kids, so that is also helpful.
It does make a difference. But what I really loved about this is talking so much about context, both about external situations and internal, your mind state, your physiology, all this sort of stuff. And it's just very freeing. It's kind of like, you know, this whole thing of what you should be mm-hmm. as a fundamentalist Christian, you know, this is what you should feel. This is what you should believe. This is how you should behave. And you get this little homogenized, I don't know if that's the right word. It's like a cookie cutter. This is what it should look like. And if you fall outside those lines, there's something wrong with you. You're not devoted enough. You're not holy enough. You're not whatever enough. And that same mindset can get imposed upon our sexuality and the feeling of failure, or I don't measure up, or I'm not this, or I'm not that. And that does more to suppress being able to just engage and enjoy yourself and another person than anything else. So yeah, that's my mommy advice.
Thanks, Mom.
G'day, I'm Troy.
And I'm Brian.
And we're the hosts of I Was a Teenage Fundamentalist, an ex-evangelical podcast.
We used to be loyal members and leaders in Australian Christian megachurches, but we're not anymore.
I Was a Teenage Fundamentalist is an honest and hilarious peek behind the curtain at the weird, the worrying, and sometimes traumatic world of evangelicals and Pentecostals.
We share our stories, we interview prominent guests in the global ex-evangelical space, and provide a platform for others to tell their stories about their time in evangelicalism and their journey out.
Shortlisted at the recent Australian Podcast Awards, I Was a Teenage Fundamentalist gives you a unique global perspective into one of the fastest growing religions in the world from the people who actually lived it.
You can find us wherever you get your podcasts and iwasateenagefundamentalist.com.
I think it also is very freeing when you can like realize like what I'm going through is normal, whether that's, you know, like you
that's right.
feel shame around the fact that you have a kink, or you feel shame that, you know, around the fact that you and your husband aren't having sex as often as you would like to be having it, or as often as you think you should be having it. But I also think that there's like this weird expectation when you're raised in purity culture to like remain like completely, utterly pure with not a impure thought in your mind, very asexual mm-hmm. as women until we reach marriageable age. And then when we get married, it's like expected for us to be like these sexual queens, like these people who know how to perform in bed and who know how to be these amazing like sexual objects for our husbands and to keep them sexually satisfied so that they won't go look at porn and so that they won't go cheat. And it's this very strange pendulum swing when you go from being in purity culture up until getting married. And then all of a sudden, you haven't received any education. You are looking at sex from a lens of shame and fear. You don't know what's going on with your body. You don't know what's going on with theirs. Like, there's no education. And so that is important to like pay attention to as well, is not only are people struggling like in the area of like, wow, I'm not even having sex as much as I would like to, or the sex isn't good. I wish it could be better. There's people who straight up like are like, I think I'm supposed to like this, but I also don't know because I've been told my whole life that it's bad and it's dirty. And there's a lot of trauma that comes with that as well.
Yeah, there really is. Hey, I wanted to follow up. Molly, in what you were saying a few minutes ago, you used the word blessed. And I'm just wondering, is that like, I was actually thinking about this the other day because I will show you this. I have this thing right here that somebody gave me, and it's pretty, and it was a gift. You probably can't read it.
Say hashtag blessed.
It says thankful, grateful, blessed. And I was looking at this a couple days ago, and I was like, I don't like that word anymore.
Hashtag blessed.
Hashtag blessed.
I only like it in that context. Hashtag blessed. But that's sarcastic.
I think I use a lot of like Christianese. Sometimes it comes out and it's like more like ironic and funny.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if I like take it on as like, oh yeah. No, I think that though, when the context I was using it in is though, like I have been really, really, I guess, fortunate to have partners who are all about like communicating and consent and being present with what is showing up in the moment not shaming and not – and like being able to communicate. And it makes for a much easier time when having sexual experiences. So
yeah,
especially coming out of this kind of environment.
Is that with primarily with other females, or were you able to have that level of communication with males?
With both. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think communication is so important. And that's why I think a lot of times, you know, we'll talk very openly now because that has been so taboo for so long. And being able to bring those things out of the closet of shame and be able to say, if you're really honest with a group of safe people, we're all questioning and going through body changes and trying to understand if this is quote unquote normal. And I think particularly childbearing years. I mean, I look at, you know, the coworkers that I have now who have to take children, they're rushing out the door in the morning and they're working at these very high stressful jobs and then they're going home and they've got to do all this stuff. And I don't know how they do that. I mean, that's so much.
Me neither. I don't know if I want kids. It's a lot.
It is a lot. And then when you're having, you know, babies, you're right, we didn't get the sex education that we needed. And so you're expected, you know, I think there's a chapter in a book somewhere on how soon you can have sex after you have a baby. And I remember feeling immense pressure.
Isn't it like 6 weeks?
6 weeks.
That's nothing.
I know. Especially if you've had any kind of episiotomy.
I didn't stop bleeding for 13 weeks.
Wow.
But you're supposed to be back at work and already having sex by...
Oh, I went to court at 6 weeks.
Yeah.
So
that was horrible. Yeah.
No. But you said you went to court?
Yeah, I went to court.
I heard that part of your story, Rachel, and I really kind of related to that. I mean, mine was later in life, but my ex took me to court to try to get full custody of the minor children. And, can you tell me a little bit more about, if you can, about that experience for you?
I mean, sure. What do you want to know?
Well, as far as I guess, were you completely on your own? I mean, did you have, I know your parents looked down on you because, you know, you were a single mom and, you know, that relationship wasn't that supportive, but did they support you in that? Did you have any friends or family helping you through that process?
My mom was definitely there for that. 'Cause my mom also was a single mom with me. So my mom, even though she didn't speak to me for 3 or 4 days after I told her I was pregnant, she did eventually come around. So what ended up leading to the court thing, which there's been shit going on this summer as well, which just has me stressed out that we might need to go back to court again. And
are you allowed to talk about it then? Is it okay?
I mean, yeah, there's nothing definitive, I guess, about it. It's just stuff I'm dealing with and wrestling with because my ex is a huge narcissist and I'm dealing with like borderline personality disorder. I'm dealing with a lot of stuff that just, there's a lot of decisions he makes that don't make sense. And in an effort to stop the cycle that we've been in for so many years that I'm frankly exhausted of. Mm-hmm. I am trying to figure out how to be a better adult and take a better approach to this. And so when I say go back to court, I just mean like no nonsense. Like we're not going to talk about it. I'm not going to deal with your shenanigans and we're just going to do it, you know? And so when I was reflecting back on how this whole thing started, because most of the time he's the one that takes me to court, right? And I have to scramble. And a lot of times I've been screwed mm-hmm. over because our system, at least in Kansas, is so fucked up. Our court system is so fucked up. And that's a whole other story that we won't even get into. Our civil custody family law court mm-hmm. system is so mm-hmm. fucked. Mm-hmm. And so I'm sure, Sharon, you have an experience with it that I would love to hear as well once I'm finished. but what started this whole thing was my daughter was about 3 weeks old. And I think it was like the night before Thanksgiving and my ex was over. We'd been having some issues with just trying to figure out like seeing the child, not seeing the child, what we were, what we weren't. I, again, was 20 years old. He was the only boyfriend I ever had. So this was at my parents' house and I somehow pissed him off. I think I told him he needed to leave. He said something that scared me. He did something that frightened me. He's a big 6'4" man. Anyway. When he went to give my daughter back to me, he took his elbow and just straight up elbowed me into like my side as he was holding our 3-week-old baby. And it freaked me out as it would. And then he like stormed out and left. And I freaked me out so bad. I think I ended up calling my sister and like crying and sobbing to her because I didn't know what to do. I was like flabbergasted because he'd never like hit me before, you know, touched me in that way. And so that ended up getting back to my parents and my parents were like, well, he can't come over again. Like that is not okay. He can't touch you like that. And then my mom did this knee jerk reaction of we're going to hire a lawyer and we're going to tell him what's what, and we're going to tell him what's up. And so once we did that, he of course retaliated and hired a lawyer back. And 3 weeks later, when I was barely 6 weeks postpartum, we're in court. You know, in the morning, arguing about child custody, all of this stuff. Gosh. Like times when, as a woman, you're supposed to be resting, you're supposed to be recovering, you're not supposed to have stress, you know, things like that. And it did prolong my postpartum, I think, probably because I bled another 7 weeks after that, which is abnormal.
Right.
I also had placenta stuck in my uterus. It came out about 9 days after I had had her. I had a fever, all of this stuff. Wow. And then I went into straight up hyperthyroidism. Like my body, I dropped like 30 pounds, had all these symptoms, couldn't stand up straight, had zero energy. And this whole time I'm in fight or flight mode, just trying to deal with my ex. I got mastitis at one point, which is insane to have. I got it when she was a year old, and my ex insisted that I continue to drive her to him because it didn't affect my cognitive abilities. I was like, sir, I am unwell. So my whole experience, I guess, with court was awful. I don't think it did my body any favors. I don't think it did my mental health any favors. I don't think it allowed me to heal. I don't think 6 weeks postpartum in any case for jobs, for sex, for anything is enough time for a woman. I think it all depends on the woman. And I think men need to fuck off and just tell, like, let their women tell them when they're ready to do whatever it is again.
Yeah.
Like, you're on their timeline. And the same goes for work. Like, I think maybe 3 months would be more understandable to go back to work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, 6 weeks is nothing. I think that absolutely needs to change.
Yeah.
I agree.
With the court evaluate, did they do a professional psychological evaluation?
No.
For either of you? That's one thing I might suggest.
Do you have to request that?
I believe you do. When my ex in the divorce proceedings wanted to have me declared as an unfit mother and to him have sole custody, it was a little bit different because I was the one making the money. I was the one financially supporting the family. And one of the things we did was my therapist suggested to get my lawyer, because they knew each other, to ask the court to do a court-ordered psychological evaluation of both of us. And so the court did that, and they ordered that. And then in the findings, there actually was a diagnosis of my ex with... So it was in the clinical evaluation. Because of that, what happened in the custody thing was that we were granted joint physical custody, so equal time, but all decisions about health and education and all of these other things, critical decisions, were mine exclusively. And that it was a result of the psych evaluation. So why I keyed into that was when you just mentioned, I didn't know if what you're saying you're dealing with your daughter's father is true diagnosable disorders or just more how he behaves. But anyway, that may or may not help you in the struggles you have. And that is so hard, Rachel. I mean, the complexities that get added to parenting when there is not a cooperative relationship, that's just an awful burden to bear. And I'm really sorry. I'm sorry you're dealing with that.
Yeah, it's like, it's hard because you want to protect your children. You want to make good decisions for your children. When you have another parent constantly either conniving against you or trying to do things that are inconvenient for everyone, it causes me a lot of stress. I don't think I would have this much gray hair as I do now at 30 years old, or 31 now, I guess. It's been a lot of stress for about 10 years. And even now, even this summer has been really hard because I just sometimes don't know if he's going to bring her back when he says he's going to bring her back.
Yeah.
And the stress of that is so, I don't even know how to describe it as like a mom. It's, I try to be chill about it, but I'm like so not chill and it's so scary to me. And the reason I do say with confidence that he's borderline personality disorder is when we were trying to work it out, I took him to my therapist for a couple sessions. And after that, my therapist was like, yeah, I would absolutely diagnose him with borderline personality disorder.
Yeah.
So maybe he could be a normal human if he took some medication. But and there's my friend told me about this therapy thing, EMR?
EMDR.
Is it EMDR?
Oh, maybe it's something else.
It's like I thought it was only three letters, but it's specific to people who do struggle with borderline personality disorders.
Oh, yeah, that's something different. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I can't remember what it is. And like, so they have resources out there for them. But the thing with people with borderline personality disorder and narcissism will not go and do those things. They think there's nothing wrong with them.
Right.
You know, so it's like, I don't know. I could explore that, getting official diagnosis in that area, but
we'll find out from a lawyer first if it makes any difference for you in terms of court rulings and your rights. Because if it's not going to help you in that, then you're just, it's not worth it.
Then it's not worth it. And he's still in the belief system, right?
Yeah. And that's what's so fascinating about this. And especially his now young wife is so hardcore Christian and so engulfed in this thinking to where half the shit she says to me doesn't make sense. And she will come down on me. She takes liberties to try to tell me how to parent as well. Mm. And it's just so very interesting to be so fucked up. And in this backwards sort of behavior, and then to call yourself a Christian. I think, like I said in my episode, I think part of this was my way out of Christianity because I was like, people who believe in God that are acting like this, and my mom would always try to be like, well, you know, you can't just like, you know, say that all Christians are like this. This is just certain Christians. And I was like, these people are hardcore into Christianity and they are fucking horrible people. So.
Yeah.
That's my ticket out. That's when I take my leave. I'm done.
And you'd made reference, I think it was in that episode, just about do they hide in these places? And that was one of my beginning phases to come out. We had created this post Last Days community in Pennsylvania, and the types of issues that the families were dealing with were off the spectrum from what the world was dealing with. I mean, police were showing up, knives were being pulled. And, you know, we're trying to talk to my ex's family, who's normal family. And I'm embarrassed. I'm like, I don't know why this group of people has so many issues. And I began to see there's some really undiagnosed mental health issues that does hide in this belief system.
Think mental illness hides in Christianity.
Yes.
I think Christianity attracts people who are struggling with this stuff. I think it's very attractive to them because, like, how many times have we been like, my pastor was a narcissist, my dad was a narcissist? Like, this is like a thing, like, it's a common thread running through these Christian circles, is certain roles attract certain personality disorders and certain personality types.
Yes. And then it gets reinforced because they're on the righteous side.
Oh, yes.
And that is what, you know, my family currently deals with somebody who's still in the belief system, their father. And it's like, this is justified and it is so batshit on so many levels. And yet I'm the devil. Mm-hmm. And I think towards the political spectrum as well, because, you know, one of the reasons we decided to start our podcast is we were very instrumental at the dawning of the religious right, which is also part of our, you know, this is our apology tour, you know, for the Americans Against Abortion. And just seeing how much the law is.
Yeah, wait, that was an actual organizational name. Yes. That, so it just goes, you know, it was, quote, Americans Against Abortion.
Oh, Americans Against Abortion. Oh, fuck off.
And how all the law is focused on that. And then you're right, not towards young children's health care, not towards women being able to stay at home and support these children.
Not toward human rights in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where are these babies being born into?
And it's like all of this political power has just been invested in this very small portion of it. And it's really over time, because what year was that, Sharon? 19?
Oh my God. They were like in the 83, 84, 85 realm.
Yes. And so you look at the time that has taken and just the evolution of the rabid right, the rabid political landscape that even horrifies me. I mean, because I feel like we were at the beginning of this, but it's horrifying.
It's all a political movement too. Yeah. Like, it's not even really about the babies. Like, the people who buy into it think it is, but really, like, Republicans used to be for abortion at one point in time. And because it got turned around, it was all like political movement to move the masses against each other.
Did you guys hear the interview that Troy and Brian did on I Was a Teenage Fundamentalist with Frankie Schaefer? That was fascinating.
I don't know if I heard that one.
I don't think I did either.
Frankie Schaefer is the son of Francis Schaefer, who was like LaBrie Fellowship in Switzerland. And he was kind of this sort of mystic, sort of, he got co-opted, and then his son got co-opted big time. And Frankie Schaefer is now like totally disavowed all this religious right-wing shit, and also is seeing the role he played. I mean, I think that's one thing that Tracy and I are just like, holy fuck. I mean, the things that we did in our ignorant exuberance, in our misguided, just our misguidedness, to lay the foundation and to really begin to do things that helped be the foundation stones for what this has become, where the evangelicals have gone, okay, happy for Trump. I mean, even Keith Green's widow, Melody Green, we hear and see things like she could be a fucking full-on Trumper from what I can tell. And I'm like,
oh, I wouldn't be surprised.
How did that happen?
Because Trump is a cult leader and she's attracted to narcissistic cult leaders.
She wants a cult leader.
She loves a cult leader. It's Trump attracts a very specific kind of person, and it's the kind of person who wants something to get behind.
Well, and then he hides under the banner of Christianity. Yeah, like, he's like, I'm a Christian. And everyone's like, okay. And I'm like, can we look Christians at this guy and just literally see he's not?
I remember being a kid and it was like always such a big deal when there was be a celebrity that was a Christian. And it was like, oh my God, the Jonas Brothers are Christians and they have purity rings. So we're all going to get purity rings because it's cool to get purity rings and do this purity culture thing. Like, Christians are so obsessed with celebrities. And they're so obsessed with celebrity Christians, and they will get behind anything that celebrity Christian does. And Trump is a celebrity Christian. You know, he's backed by the Christian alt-wing, right? Yes.
Which is such a mind fuck, because at the same time, they preach against idols and celebrity.
Right.
And so, you know, even in the group that we came from, obviously Keith Green and Melody Green still have a very rabid fan base following that you're exactly right. I mean, you said that exactly right. They would absolutely say that they don't follow a cult leader, as that's part of the devil horns. They think we're pretty horrible for saying that. And then they have this crazy devotion to all of this extremism, and it is baffling to us now because we did preach against that. You know, Keith Green was kind of known for preaching against that. And then those are the very people that are in it.
Well, but you know, that's an immaturity. So I've come to realize that this need for right and wrong, black and white, absolutes. That is a very immature state of emotion and intellect. It's very immature. That's what toddlers want. That's what young kids want. They need to know yes, no, right, wrong, black, white, because to try to look at things with shades of gray, to try to parse out the possibility of it depends or nuance, that takes some maturity. And I think if you examine these political mindsets and this almost unquestioned following, because hey, he's gonna appoint the justices and they're gonna outlaw, you know, abortion. It's all this black and white thinking. And it's just astounding to me how intellectually lazy it is.
Yes. You know, Sharon, I don't know if you want to give a little quick background on Americans Against Abortion and your role in that. And
oh, fuck.
And this is why this is a difficult topic, and even for my kids, because they know how much we were a part of that movement. And now looking at what has become, to the point of our earlier conversation, to the neglect of every other logical family law taking care of our country, to the neglect of women, to the neglect of taking care of these children, every resource has gone into this just outlaw abortion. And it is upside down dramatically. And so we do feel like we had a part to play in that. And so what do, you know, how do we make a voice now to help turn that tide?
Well, I'm just going to apologize to Rachel and Molly and every other young woman listening, young woman, middle-aged woman, I don't know. We played an early role in helping to take away your rights, your autonomy over your body. And it's a sobering and horrible thing to look ourselves in the mirror and say, yeah, we helped make this real. And
and how? Like, 'cause I don't think they know.
Well, there were a series of articles that we published with the Last Days magazine / Last Days newsletter. The first one that was anti-abortion was written by Melody Green, called Children-Things We Throw Away. And just to give you context, I mean, our magazine at its zenith had almost 500,000 subscribers. And it was a clean list. I mean, it was an incredible achievement. And we also published all these articles in pamphlet form. We called them tracts, that were sent out by the hundreds of thousands, if not millions. And a couple years, I'd have to go back and look at the actual timeline, but after Keith died, you know, one of the things Melody wanted to do was kind of start really crusading on the whole anti-abortion thing. And we came up with this name. I don't even know if you know about this, Tracy. So the name that we wanted to work with was Americans Against Abortion, because let's just say what it's going to be and have it be its own umbrella and arm. Well, there was some other dude, I think he was based out of Oklahoma, some other pastor that had registered the name Americans Against Abortion.
Everyone's trying to capitalize off of this.
Oh, man. But here's the deal. He had it registered. So when we started using it, he sent a letter saying, you're infringing on my copyright. And then we were like, oh, but we're already so invested in it. Maybe we can pay him money and buy it. You know what I think? Maybe I'm wrong, but I'm pretty fucking sure we paid him $100,000 in the mid-80s for the right to use that name.
No way.
No, I think you're right. I remember a scandal about this.
That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. And that was God's money from donations. I mean, weren't we good stewards?
This is also before inflation. Like, that's a ridiculous amount of money now for something like that.
I know. Anyway, so then we have this series of articles. There are actually two that are still being promoted, and maybe I got to go do something about that now. I don't know what I can do. If you go look, Attitudes Against Abortion and Actions, or Attitudes for Action.
Attitudes and Actions.
Yeah, and they are written by Melody Green and Sharon Bennett. That was my married name. So here's also another thing was that at the time I was writing things for this magazine, and I wrote one of them, and Melody was going to be the final editor. But then she said, oh, this needs to run under my name, under Melody Green's name, because I'm the one with the name recognition. You know, and I'm like in my early 20s, and I remember struggling with the sense of like, is this just my pride that says if I wrote something and I'm the author, it should have my name on it? So anyway,
honey, you just saved yourself so good from like burning in all the fire and brimstone of social media reckoning, where people dig and say, oh, Sharon is all talking ex-evangelical. Look at this article she wrote, anti-abortion, you know, all of this. Like, and you're saying that she can come out and lead the way in the deconstruction movement. Like, look, Melody saved you one. Like, you're okay, good.
There we go. She did me a solid.
They can't dig this up now. Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't write that. What article? You didn't write it?
Well, no, they can. No. It's in my name. You can go to the website right now.
She took her name off of it?
She allowed it. No. She allowed it to be both art by both of us, with her being leading first. Okay.
I was going
to
say.
No. It's there. It's by Melody Green and Sharon Bennett.
Oh, but your name isn't Bennett anymore.
It's not Bennett anymore, but I own it.
Yeah. What article? You didn't write this article.
Yeah, I did.
No,
I did.
Sharon,
I own
you did.
It.
No.
Look, I bought into the bullshit.
Sharon's okay with it.
I'm trying to help you here.
You know what, though? Taking ownership.
It's a lot of shame.
No, it's not shame. What it is taking ownership for the real shit that I did. Taking ownership for it and looking at it and going, holy fuck. You know, and we also, there was this whole march across America, Americans Against Abortion, Walk for Life. We're going to have to do a whole thing on it at some point.
A whole deep dive, but it ended up being a very large petition presented by
3 million names, 3 million names that we and churches around the country. And I'll bet you if you ask your parents, I bet you they were involved at some point with this. It was incredibly huge.
Oh, I'm sure.
And we promised everybody that their names would not be used for anything other than presenting this to President Ronald Reagan.
What else did you use the names for?
Well, what happened?
You're going to hate it.
We got kicked out.
You're gonna end up disconnecting this call.
Oh, boy.
Seriously.
We got kicked out of the ministry.
That's true. We're hands are clean on this.
Our hands are clean on this one. After we left, Melody wanted to hobnob with the whole religious right that was moving up so strong. And they turned those names over to the campaign of Pat Robertson when he wanted to run for president.
Stop. That's wild.
Yeah.
Fuck.
And those names, 3 million names and addresses and contact information, got fed into the right-wing political machine from what we did.
Was that legal?
No, it's not legal.
It's unethical.
It's unethical.
You were complaining about that at the time, like, this was against our principles, because even at that time, I never signed up in Christianity to be a political arm. So I was pretty horrified that this political arm was starting to take off at that time for all the wrong fundy reasons, but they were reasons.
But you were pure. You were more pure than me. That's for sure.
My default back then was like, whoa, Jesus changes hearts, not your political allegiance. Like, what's the deal here? So it took off, but that is a real thing, because obviously, you know, my kids are your kids' age, if we can say that enough. And this has been a real point of anger for them, and as mm-hmm. I'm sure you guys have, and seeing how intensely it has grown and become just this horrible landscape. And so that is one thing Sharon and I, we talk about, and we haven't gotten into it, but what now can we do to help? Because it's very sad to see what has happened and been eroded in women's rights because of the earlier Jesus people who became the fundamentalists, who became political, who ended up having this very powerful platform in the United States. So we're sorry.
We're sorry.
Yeah, it's overwhelming to even think about like what we can even do, like, to help change the tides. I think it's some days I'm like, it's so far gone. I don't even know if like my vote is going to do much, but you know, they say that if you keep calling your senators and petitioning and writing letters and showing up to vote.
Well, I think it's been in the works for so long.
Yeah.
That it's just, it feels overwhelming because it's like, well, if it was happening back then and that was the start of it, and it ultimately ended up reversing Roe v. Wade finally for that amount of time.
Yeah, it took almost 40 years. Almost 40 years.
Right. You're like, so will it take another 40 years? Because even think about even getting Roe v. Wade like passed in the Supreme Court. That took so long and so much of women just fighting for their rights. And so it's discouraging because, okay, unless like you have states doing their own thing, like obviously it's not protected under a federal level. I mean, some states are so extreme and some states are still allowing it to happen. I don't know. I don't have a lot of hope in this area as long as Christian nationalism is on the rise.
Yeah.
They're all just fucking coming of age and doing their thing, because we talked with Tia Levings about the political state of everything. And she was saying that, like, to some extent, they are breeding these people from a very young age to do this.
To be politicians.
Yeah, to be politicians.
Like training their boys to be politicians.
And they are, you know, like I said, coming of age. They're starting to get into the Congress and the Senate and all of this stuff now. And you're like, I think it's a snowball at this point. I don't know. I don't know. Like, I want to be that person that's hopeful and like, well, let's fucking get in there too and do some shit. Like, there's probably just as much of us as there is of them, mm-hmm. but I don't think this is going to be easily corrected, I guess.
It's not an easy change. And I didn't, you know, I've always been one who's kind of poo-pooed and, you know, gone, oh my God, rolled my eyes to the idea of conspiracies. But yeah, the, you know, shiny, happy people and looking at the IBLP and the Joshua generation and all this other stuff. I mean, there is a concerted effort, and there is a reason why all this extreme white nationalist Christian shit has risen and has gained so much power. You know, sometimes I will tell you, Molly and Rachel, what I have thought is, man, our hope, the hope is in your generation.
Yes.
That's where the hope is. It's your generation.
But we're scared.
We got to die off.
Millennials are tired.
We're tired. We're looking at Gen Z. Like, I hope you're going to be the one. You're the chosen one, you guys. It's going to be you, because we're passing the baton because we're exhausted.
We're exhausted. So
we're actually working three jobs and still not able to afford rent.
Oh. We've lived through two recessions. We're exhausted. So I watched this thing on TikTok, and I know it's TikTok, but like, there's actually books written about it where there's America goes in series of like every 20 years is a new sort of era. Mm-hmm. And so we're in the crisis era. We're at the turning of this, not the turning of the century, but we're at the turning of where we start over. And so I guess this last one started over at World War II once that war ended. That was when we went into our new set of 80 years where there's like the, you know, the high years, the, you know, innovation years, all of these years. And now we're in the crisis year. So millennials were just born in like a shit era. But essentially, we were dubbed as the heroes of this century because we are the frontline workers. We are the, you know, we're the people getting in there and getting shit done. So it actually might be us. Gen Z is going to produce the next round of artists, apparently, that were born during like the last era, if that makes sense. I'm not explaining it very well. I'll send you the TikTok video. But essentially, actually, it is us.
I don't know how I feel about this.
I know, but it actually makes a lot of sense. I'll send you all the video.
Yeah, we'll put all the things in the show notes. But the boomers are getting older, right? And I know we're at the tail end, but the boomer, I always have this conversation with some of my kids. We're fading. Like, the boomers' influence.
Die off is what we need to do.
Is fading, and it's happening, and it's just a matter of time.
Sharon, yeah. That was the most therapeutic thing I have heard you say tonight. Boomers need to die off. Thank you for saying that.
Well, you guys are the lower end, so you're not going to die off as soon as, like,
we like you. Stay alive.
You know, what is the oldest boomer right now? Is the oldest boomer like 75, maybe?
I don't know.
I don't know.
We looked it up at the beginning. We'll put that in the show.
I think it's like 1949 or something.
But even us who are at the tail end, like I've got, you know, retirement on my horizon, right? And I think if we could really get some people to advocate for putting some term limits and some age limits on our political representation, because it's insane to me that 80 and 90 year olds are running stuff still, right? When they should be bowing out and letting the next generation come forward. Mm-hmm. So I think that's my hope, is that the boomers are on their way out. It is a matter of time, years, short years, for us to be out and out of the power centers of influence. And so communication has never been what communication is, just your podcast, being able to get out there and really encourage people to, you know, let their voices be heard. And I think women, honestly, it kind of comes back to what we were starting. The power of women, I think we're just coming into it. And the ability, what we're at 51% of the population now. I mean, I think we actually tick past the halfway mark, and really having women stand back up for our rights and our voice in this nation, I think there's hope. So I'm hoping I'm not just like, yeah, rah, cheerleader. I do think there is mm-hmm. hope, and we need to start now continuing to talk and encouraging people to get involved. And even in the abortion, I've had some very honest conversations with my daughters on this, because I did have pregnancies, obviously 5. And so just the narrative of, you know, killing babies, let's just kill babies, right, is a really bad message. But when you can really start bringing that data in as far as what's happening in these states, that people aren't getting their life-saving care, that, you know, all of these people that are going on welfare, all the other data points that are happening because of these laws, that's the inspiring mm-hmm. part mm-hmm. of the message. Mm-hmm. And I think they've co-opted this, and we're guilty of it, because we had baby choice, which was taken around in a casket as a saline abortion.
This was an actually aborted fetus that we held in our hands, this little baby of aborted fetus.
And took it around on a campaign. And of course, that's a very emotional message. So people are like, yeah. We don't want that to be legal. And so the message of being able to get birth control in the hands, sex education into the hands of young women, being able to understand how these laws impact it.
Well, and the statistic too, that most abortions, I don't know how old the fetus was that you were carrying around, but most abortions happen before, like, what, yes. 9 weeks of pregnancy?
Clearly, clearly.
They do not look like whatever it is that you're carrying around.
That's right. That's right. Well, that's, and let me
that's
just
propaganda.
It was. We were involved in emotional propaganda. And I will say that my perspective now in my 60s is very different than it was back then. But I also do not see this as a black and white issue. I do not see this as all abortions should be allowed or no abortion should be allowed. I don't see it that way. And I think it comes back down to taking the time to be intellectually honest and vigorous and not lazy, and to look at ethics and to look at morals and to look at humanity and to look at evidence, all these things, they take effort. It's much more than the Bible says this and my mm-hmm. pastor said that. I mean, that's the lazy, immature bullshit. And
it's such a personal choice too. So if it's something yes. that you really don't want to do and you would never do, you don't have to do it. That is correct. Your personal right. And I think that's where the smart people have ended up with it, to where they're like critically thinking, they're like, if I don't want to do it, I'm not going to do it, but I'm not going to make that decision for someone else, you know? Right. And that's, again, that's why it's about choice.
Exactly.
You know, it's a very hard personal decision.
It is.
And that's where we need to leave it. We don't make someone else take antidepressants, right? Like that's your own personal choice. We don't make someone else like get their gallbladder removed because maybe it's medically necessary. You know, everything in healthcare is your own like personal decision. And so I don't know why we're making these decisions about something else that is also healthcare. So,
yeah.
Yes.
It's nuanced. It is nuanced because, you know, to be intellectually honest, the embryo, the fetus, is human and is life. And the question of what is the value, what at what point does the law matter, those are valid and difficult questions. And yeah, those are valid and difficult questions. So that's why I feel like there can be extremists on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that rational, compassionate, informed, that's what we need, without a black and white, but saying there is nuance, there is complexity, and these are the conversations that need to be had. And again, Tracy and I are saying we are so sorry for the things that we did and said in our idealistic, ignorant, arrogant immaturity all those years ago that set the stage for some pretty shitty shit to go down.
That put this in motion.
Yeah.
And there's enough women's rights to be bringing to the forefront to get that flipped back again. You know, I often liken it to divorce, right? All these fundies want to have this theocracy, but they don't want divorce to be outlawed because that would wipe out hell of a lot of them.
Not yet, but you know, it may be coming. It may be coming. So, hey, what do you think, Tracy? We need to start kind of...
Well, I guess I have one question and then we're gonna end it. So have you guys seen the Barbie movie?
Yes.
I have not seen it yet.
Saw it on Friday. It's fantastic.
I can't wait.
I'm waiting it with great anticipation.
So good.
And were you allowed to play with Barbies?
No.
I was, yeah.
They were too sexual and too grown up. And my mom did not want us to be inappropriate with them.
I was so inappropriate with them.
And she felt like because they had boobs that we would be inappropriate with them. And she was right because my friend had Barbies and I would play with Barbies over at her house. And our Barbies were definitely scissoring.
Of course they were.
And they were having threesomes with Ken and taking showers together and being very inappropriate. And so my mother was very right that she didn't want us playing with them because we would make them do inappropriate things. But I have to say I had Beanie Babies and I also made my Beanie Babies do inappropriate things.
Oh, that's hilarious.
You can make any of your animals do inappropriate things. It's not just Barbies.
But I found it interesting, like, reading about what Barbie stood for when she came out with this movie coming out, I didn't know any of this because
women empowerment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like about women empowerment and women being able to own their own house and own their own car and have their own career and be whatever they wanted to be when it came to a career. And that Barbie wasn't isolated to just being a mother and a wife. And that Ken was more of an accessory. Like she could have him around if she felt like it. And I was
arm
like,
candy.
Oh my gosh, what an amazing, empowering message that I didn't get to participate in because they were too grown up and too sexual. And there was this big worry about us having inappropriate behavior with these dolls. But like we had American Girl dolls, and American Girl doll is problematic in itself with like all sorts of weird colonial ideals being shoved down our throats. But
yeah,
they were celebrated. Yeah. Like my sister had a slave doll.
Oh my God.
Like,
It's Addie. I'm very familiar with the American. Yeah.
Addie is like a runaway. She's a runaway slave. And like my sister had this doll and like we would play like running away from slavery.
Well, Bible condones slavery. So I don't even know why we're worried about that.
Wow. Little white kids.
That's and, like, so much more appropriate.
Yeah, right. Right. So we just think that like it's interesting. And so I was thinking about that and how Barbie is like coming out in this film and they're really showing the big positive influence that Barbie had over a generation of girls. And I'm like, wow, little Christian girls don't understand the impact.
Don't understand.
No.
Rachel, what was your experience?
With Barbies?
Yeah.
I don't remember a ton. I know my mom had mixed feelings about me having them, but I think she got a shit ton at a garage sale once for like a small amount of money. So she was like, okay, well...
It's a good
deal. Here you go. I also had like a dollhouse with just like regular dolls. I don't know. I think my mom like was just hesitant with it. Like she didn't do the empowerment thing. I guess I didn't really see how much different from the other dolls that I had that that Barbie was, but like, I'm sure my experience was a lot different than like the girls that were full out, you know, allowed to have all of the Barbie accessories and Ken. I don't think I was allowed to have a Ken, actually. That might have been it. Maybe I just had Barbie.
That's exactly our rule. We can compromise.
You can have Barbie, but not Ken.
Because my sister bought it. But we were like, the compromise, we will not have the Ken, because we were just not thinking that scissoring could happen, I guess.
Because gay people don't exist. But they don't exist. I have a funny antidote. So we weren't allowed to have Barbies, but we...
Wait. Antidote or anecdote?
That one.
Anecdote. Okay.
Anecdote. I have a funny anecdote because we couldn't have Barbies, but we could have... Bible character Barbies. Oh, so I had the Virgin Mary baby Jesus. I also had Moses from the Prince of Egypt. Oh, and he was like Ken sized. The Virgin Mary, Moses. Let me just say that Mary was not a virgin for very long.
Wait, what's that line in Keith's song where he goes, "Hey, Moses, go on down." Do you remember that?
Moses was going down.
Go down, Moses. God. That's what it is. Go down, Moses.
Yeah, he was going down. For sure. But so I would do very inappropriate behavior with those dolls. And those were Bible dolls. So I feel like that was worse than Barbie.
Of course.
That's great.
I think I need to give you my headdress on that.
Do I get a point?
You earn it on that. Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to say I am the completely asexual one in all of this because I was just pissed off with Barbies. I had the Breyer model horses. And when you try to make Barbie ride the horse, one of her legs pops off.
Oh, I know.
So they were just worthless. Just worthless.
It's pointless.
Yeah.
I played with horses more than I did with Barbies.
You have to get the Barbie horse because the Barbie horse has like a special saddle that her tiny little crotch can fit on.
Well, I'm going to go see the Barbie movie. I can't wait.
I can't wait for it. It's going to be great.
It's so good.
Yeah. Everyone has had, you know, feminists hated her and then fundamentalists hated her. So I was interested on where we all kind of lined up on that.
I love how many times they say the patriarchy in the movie Barbie.
I'm ready.
It's so good. And they talk about the controversies with Barbie. There's musical numbers. It's fantastic. You're going to love it.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, wonderful. Well, we're going to end it here, wrap it up. I think at the beginning, before you came on, Rachel, we had talked about meeting in, I'm going to say it wrong, Louisville, Kentucky. all together, culty sisters, cousins, and doing a recording session with some fun events.
We got to do it.
Yeah, it could be like a special like Patreon offering. Be like, you can only get,
which means you got to get your Patreon going,
basically,
Molly.
Well, it's gonna be like you have to pay us money to see this shit.
This shit is wild.
Exclusive content.
4 hours of unadulterated content.
Tracy, would we kiss again for that?
Yes.
I don't know.
Oh my god, stop. You guys are so gay.
I think you have to. We'll recreate it and we'll take a picture.
Yeah. So if you guys want to tell us, that all the people that already don't know, how to find your wonderful show with the best toast ever, how can they find you?
Everything, literally everything is at Cheers to Leaving.
Oh, you're so smart.
You can email us, cheerstoleaving@gmail.com, Instagram, TikTok. Facebook group is in our show notes of every single episode that we have. You can search it. I think it's Cheers to Leaving Exvangelical Support Group. But also you can go in our show notes if you don't want to search for it. But yeah, everything is at Cheers to Leaving.
Cheers to Leaving, which makes it so much easier than us because we are Feet of Clay, Confessions of the Cult Sisters. But you can find us on Instagram, feetofclay.cultsisters. And then that link tree will take you to everything else that we have that's some kind of combination of our names, not as easy as yours.
We do have a link tree as well.
Very good. Well, Rachel and Molly, thank you both so very much. You're the beautiful daughters that we just want to adopt.
And you're the mommies we always wanted. No, not younger. Not when you were younger. We didn't want you to be our mothers then, because no, that's basically our mothers.
No.
We want the healed versions of you.
Oh, and still healing.
Yeah.
We are all still on our healing journeys. So
yes,
thanks for being a part of it. Thanks for all that you're doing to help those of your generation and ours. And we will see you all next time.
Bye.
Cheers.
Cheers.